You're listening to Payers, Providers, and Patients Oh My. I'm Payal Nanavati, joined by Savannah Williams, who is a new host to our podcast. Welcome, Savannah.
Thanks, Payal. I'm so excited to be a part of the podcast. And today's episode is about the regulatory landscape for private equity investments in healthcare.
And we have two special guests for the episode, Paul Pollock and Wayne Pryor. Paul is a partner in Kroll's New York office and concentrates his practice on mergers and acquisitions and corporate finance, specifically in the healthcare industry. And relevant for this episode, he works with private equity sponsors. Wayne is a managing director in VMG Health Financial Due Diligence Division in the Nashville office. He has over 30 years of experience in the healthcare industry with a focus on transaction services. Wayne has worked on over 450 buy-side and sell-side transactions in every subsector of the industry, ranging from $1 million to $10 billion deals. So let's dive in with some context setting for our audience. Why is this topic, private equity and healthcare, important at this moment?
Well, I think it's because private equity's involvement in healthcare has been becoming more prominent, but at the same time, becoming more controversial in recent years.
I'd say, Paul, I appreciate you, bringing up all those factors. On the pro side, again, where I see that private equity is providing, if anything, they're providing a lot of capital. There's a lot of underperforming businesses that are out there, and private equity is allowing these folks to, a lot of them have been acquired. There's a revamping of a lot of these operations. They're bringing a lot of financial expertise to kind of turn around these things. A lot of the consolidation I see a lot of times, even though I know a lot of folks are, it has somewhat of a negative connotation. I see that some of the consolidation has been very good. They've been able to cut out a lot of, there's just a lot of waste in healthcare. And I think they've been able to trim a lot of that and provide some really good value to the end consumer from that perspective, and actually provide a lot of alternatives from that perspective.
I think the issue really goes to, what's current in today's marketplace. 20 years ago, we weren't speaking at all about private equity transactions. There were probably only a handful. Now there are hundreds every year. So it's really put private equity in the spotlight. Currently in some, negative ways, there was a Harvard study at the beginning of the year which suggested that, outcomes were not as good with private equity ownership. And then there's, the media itself, which can distort things that are happening.
Thanks, Paul. So you kind of hinted at the history about we wouldn't be having this conversation 20 years ago, maybe. So could you take us back and talk to us about when private equity started getting involved in the healthcare industry and why?
Well, it probably parallels my experience with the healthcare industry because I had never done a healthcare transaction until I came to Kroll 11 years ago. And since then, I've been involved in just about every type of healthcare transaction that there is: physician practice management, laboratory deals, specialty pharmacy. What I've done covers the universe. And I guess it goes back to private equity's entry in the marketplace. I think in the early 2000s, you had something like 70, under 100 transactions a year. To now over 400 transactions a year. So there's been an explosion of deal work. And I guess what's behind it all is really economics. Private equity identifies industries where there is an opportunity to improve financial performance and make a profit. I think that's particularly true in healthcare and in the physician practice management space in particular, where doctors aren't business people. That's not what they do. Just like lawyers are not necessarily business people. That's not picking on service providers, but they weren't trained how to run a business. And yeah, there are doctors out there who are great at doing it. But in today's environment where billing is so complicated, I think, people have looked to get out and to do something else. And private equity was more than happy to fill that vacuum because they could come in and make efficiencies and economies of scale, and then build companies up and then sell them, which is, you know, what the private equity model is, to hold something for, you know, 3 to up to 10 years.
Just to piggyback a little bit of what you just got through saying, you know, why private equity's got into healthcare. I think there's, you know, there's probably about 5 or 6 different main reasons. One is, if you think about the demographic changes, the aging of the population, stuff like that, I think a lot of private equity sees there's opportunity from that perspective. I'd say also that the market itself is very fragmented. There's certain industries within healthcare. When I think about home health, hospice, dental practices, a lot of fragmentation, the ability to like cut out the back office and consolidate and stuff such as that and provide capital to these various sectors of healthcare. I think there's a real need. And I think private equity is actually kind of filling that need from that perspective. And then also, if you think about it too, there's just strong cash flow behind a lot of these businesses and stuff such as that. And also the regulatory environment, actually, you know, with the passing of the Affordable Care Act, you know, there's been some tailwinds associated with that. I mean, I think that's allowed private equity to get in there and provide a lot of synergies, a lot of expansion from that perspective. And again, they're very good about cutting costs and stuff such as that. So I think they've been able to capitalize on the fact that, you know, healthcare, it's kind of an annuity that continues to give. And I think they see there's some great entry points from that perspective.
Just to add one other thing, I think you also see, you know, private equity's fingerprints all over value-based care. Because getting cost savings out of things and turning that into additional money, which is sort of the model that Medicare is trying to go in these days, you know, is also a way of doing it. There are businesses that have cropped up in the last couple of years, and it's not just traditional private equity, it's also venture-backed companies that are filling a market share.
No, completely agree.
And that's a great segue into my next question. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about where we see private equity focused today in the healthcare space. Are there any trends in private equity acquisitions in the healthcare space? Any specific practices that they seem to be interested in?
You know, I think probably about maybe 5-10 years ago, again, when private equity is initially getting into the marketplace, I think they were looking at the simple specialties. I'd say dermatology, ophthalmology, dentistry, and stuff like that. Since then, there's been a lot of consolidation. And what you're seeing is there's a lot more that they're kind of moving up the food chain here. I think what I see, at least relative to a lot of the diligence I'm doing, is the bigger practices. It's the gastros, the ortho, the cardiology practices. I see them buying larger facilities a lot of times, a lot of consolidation. I see a lot in the IT or the digital area. Also in the post-acute, I'm seeing them, you know, deploy capital, skilled nursing facilities, home health. I think it's kind of spreading all over, to be very honest with you. I don't know, Paul, other things you're seeing in the market?
No, you're seeing exactly what I'm seeing. I think the difference is when private equity first came in, and just highlighting what Wayne said, there were certain practices, and dermatology is probably the best example, that were very attractive because of high reimbursement rates. Now you have a gravitation towards I hate to call more generic practice, but something like cardiology, which is not a high reimbursement area. So that requires consolidation on a bigger basis and creating greater economies of scale to do it. So, you know, it really requires much more sophistication in the operations and the billings area than people had to do when they started out doing healthcare acquisitions in the private equity space.
And I think that's kind of a pro, if you think about it. I mean, the fact that they're able to, again, provide more capital and to some of these, you know, these heavier intensive type practices from that perspective, there's more consolidation. I would say there's also the defining of pathways from a medical perspective. I mean, I think there's some real key pro, private equity factors that kind of come into play. Just the fact that standardization, defining pathways, able to reduce costs from that perspective. I know a lot of times people think that, you know, when they think private equity is just driving up the cost, but I see that there's a lot of opportunity for them to cut costs out and also provide better services to a lot of the patients that are out there.
Yeah, in some ways it can also help access. I mean, most people see urgent care clinics that are all over the place. But, you know, urgent care clinics basically started out with private equity looking for ways to invest. So you could argue that, you know, access has improved as a result of private equity's involvement. And also, I mean, consolidation is not something that's just limited to private equity. It's happening all over the healthcare landscape now as hospital systems are consolidating also. I mean, the competition for private equity funds these days tends to be the big hospital systems.
No, I would agree.
Okay, great. So as we see these trends unfold in the private equity space, how do regulators react? And I mean, specifically, maybe we start first with how are these private equity investments regulated at the federal level?
Well, there's, you know, generally there's not much regulation for, there is really no private equity regulation. The regulation is in the antitrust area. When people are buying, there are limitations on, you know, antitrust issues that come up in the number of practices that can be bought in terms of size. And then you also have the traditional regulatory scheme, which, you know, regulates billing and all of the other things. So as of today, there is no regulatory scheme that impacts just private equity firms. It is uniform across the healthcare industry.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, again, they're PE's faced with it, like Paul's saying. I mean, it's like any practice out there or any, and I mean, basically it's like any practice you see. I mean, I don't think they're specifically picking on private equity from that perspective. I just think that sometimes private equity is because of the fact that they're can be a little bit more motivated. Again, I've seen, like, for instance, down in Texas, there was one of the private equity firms, I think it, they were out there buying a lot of anesthesia practices, kind of driving up the prices and stuff like that. I think, like, this is probably more at the state level. We'll probably get into that a little bit more. But the fact that, you know, they found out it was more anti-competitive in nature. But I think there's still a lot of that that's impacting the industry from that perspective.
But there is now, there has been regulations proposed for private equity funds in particular to be transparent in terms of who owns. And so I do think we're shifting into an environment where there will be more focus on regulating private equity investment in healthcare. Whether that legislation goes through or not is an open question in our Congress right now.
Paul, Wayne, you have both touched on states. So that leads me to my next question. I wanted to ask, how does regulation of private equity in the healthcare industry differ at the state level as opposed to the federal level?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're dramatically different. In the state level, you have a lot more oversight by state attorneys general, who are much more aggressive in policing it, but also the regulatory scheme is different. For instance, talk for a moment about physician practice management acquisitions, any type of thing. There are 50 states, there are 50 different laws, and one of those laws is preclusions on the corporate practice of medicine in certain states, California and New York being the two most visible of them. And basically what that says is a non-doctor can't own a medical practice. So in the, we private equity figures a way around everything, which it did in this instance, which is to have a management company operate the business and doctors operating the medical practice, and you separate the two. But, you know, every state has a different regulatory scheme. You know, for instance, Florida doesn't have a corporate practice of medicine, so a private equity firm could own a medical practice. But if they operate in different states, then you have to comply with the laws of the different states. So there are certainly many more complexities in the state regulatory environment that exists in on a state level than at the federal level. And, you know, the other part is, even on the federal level, if you're not using government payors, for example, take med spas are a great example. A med spa isn't going to be taking Medicare and Medicaid. So you take out a lot of the fraud and abuse statutes in doing that, because everything is private pay. So you have a big difference in terms of how the states operate with private equity versus the federal government. And then Wayne, maybe you want to comment on.
No, you know, it's kind of funny. You brought up med spas and stuff like that. I would think, you know, to be very honest, it's kind of funny. We actually, my firm has a group that specializes in med spas, and I didn't have an appreciation for this, that, you know, the licensing requirements. I would think that you could open a med spa, you know, you can go across state lines fairly easy, and, you know, the business would kind of remain intact, and, you know, be just kind of replicate and move from one state to the next. And that's not really necessarily the case. I mean, like going back to what you said, Paul, I mean, each state is different, and it's interesting from a licensing perspective. I mean, owning a med spa kind of in Arizona versus Florida could be drastically different. I mean, from a regulatory perspective. So you almost need, you know, you need to make sure you bring your, you know, your regulatory attorney in when you're going to open anything or do anything, because there's just a lot of regulation that occurs, and it's very state specific from that perspective. I didn't have an appreciation for that, but is, you know, again, when you talk about the corporate laws of medicine, there's various states that I've run across. Anytime I do a transaction, I mean, the ones that kind of come to mind, I'd say New York, North Carolina, California, for instance. I mean, those are just heavily regulated, and you just got to make sure you know the rules of the road before you either buy or sell or, you know, do a transaction within those areas.
You've also mentioned that state AGs have become increasingly interested in PE's role in healthcare. Anything in particular that they've been focused on?
I kind of think it, I don't know, Paul, your thoughts. I mean, I think there's been a lot of pushback from the consumer out there and stuff such as that. And I think they're looking for just more transparency. Again, you're seeing a lot of consolidation. They're driving up rates. I think that the average consumer is out there not liking kind of the landscape that they're seeing, and they kind of want change. And I think the AG is the one that, you know, can kind of peel the onion back and kind of enforce that a little bit more. I don't know, Paul, your thoughts?
No, I think that's right. Listen, the state AGs are political positions. A lot of them are elected. So, you know, they're going to gravitate to the things that create the most visibility for them, whether it's true or not. But I think a lot of these wounds are self-inflicted. You know, if you buy a dermatology practice, and all of a sudden, you know, because of consolidation, the price of going to that dermatologist increases dramatically, and it costs you more, even if you're getting reimbursed, you know, you're going to have to wait for the reimbursement or otherwise, there's going to be a visceral reaction about it. And, you know, all you have to do is have a couple of people complain to the state AG's office, and they'll begin to investigate it. And, you know, it's an industry-wide problem at that point, because, you know, there's every business that comes in. You buy a new business, you go and you look for efficiencies and economies of scale. What does that include? That may include, you know, decreasing staff, making staff work harder, all of those other things that go into the mix of how you extract more profit out of a business. And that's just going to, you know, get the attention of regulatory watchdogs, particularly if bad things happen. So if you have in nursing homes, again, there was another article of, you know, on how private equity is discouraging Medicare patients to come in their hospitals and or their nursing homes because they don't want to take it because it's low reimbursement. That's going to get an investigation. If somebody, you know, complains that their mother wasn't allowed into a facility or a loved one or whoever it is, you're going to get a state AG action. And, you know, if you're in more than one state happening in different things, then they get together and they create a much bigger issue when a bunch of state AGs together pursue a claim against an operator.
All right. So looking ahead, what else should our listeners be aware of in this space?
Well, let's see. The first thing I think you see is there's a little bit of a pause right now. You know, things that we really haven't talked about, like health tech, was very active over the last couple of years. You have now seen a pause in that area, unless Wayne, it has picked up all of a sudden. But I attended a conference earlier this month in Los Angeles that was basically an entire, the entire convention center in Los Angeles was filled up with health tech companies. So I think that's the next wave in private equity. And by private equity in this context, I'm going to say it very loosely, to include venture capital as well as buyouts. So I think you're seeing an explosion in technology, and private equity is behind that explosion because it has money and there is a need in the marketplace for enhancements in healthcare, both in back office and in terms of actual provision of healthcare services.
No, and I would piggyback that. I think one thing that I'm seeing again with AI, and AI again is all over the place, but I will say that, some things that have really, been impacting, I think, healthcare in general is just, you think about it, there's a lot of burnout, I'd say, with a lot of the staff, a lot of the nurses, the doctors and stuff such as that. I think there's, because of that, I think there's become more automation, that a lot of that's AI driven. They're trying to simplify things a lot more. I think there's more transparency that needs to occur. I hate to say it, in the environment we live in, there's just a lot of misinformation. I think a lot of folks I talk with are just trying to make sure that the right message is getting, getting pushed out there a lot of times. Just there's so much misinformation. You think about COVID, when we went through COVID, just like everybody, the spiral of information, the wrong information that was getting out there and stuff such as that. So when I talk to a lot of healthcare companies and providers, they're trying to make sure that things are very simple. The message is very consistent. They're trying to take care of patients as best they can. I think private equity is playing a role in all that. Again, I think there's more automation to come, a lot more that's driven by AI. I think that's kind of what I see in the future here.
And more regulation.
Yes.
Well, Paul, Wayne, thank you both so much for talking to us today about the role of private equity in healthcare. I know that I've learned a lot. I'm sure that our listeners will appreciate it. It's been great having you here on the podcast.
Thanks,
great Savannah. To be here.
Payers, Providers, and Patients, Oh My, is a podcast brought to you by Kroll & Mooring LLP. You can find more information at kroll.com/healthcarepodcast.